You are listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm John Williams, and Pete Zimmerman is our producer. We're here until 1 o'clock on WGN Radio. And we start our program today with a jobs report. It is sponsored by Breezy.hr. Our first guest out of the gate is Joseph Zaboyos-Roig. He is an economic policy reporter at Insider.com. Joseph, thanks for joining us on WGN.
Thanks for having me.
It's interesting to follow these jobs reports. There was an increase to the highest level in a month in the last report, right?
Yeah, so just over 500,000 people, you know, filed for unemployment. It's an increase of about 80,000, you know, from the week before, you know, but this snapped like six straight weeks of declines. So, you know, is it like a one-week increase? And as you put it, yes, like it does. It's one of the biggest increases in a month, but you know, lots of economists would argue that, you know, like we're going to see some weeks where the data may go in another direction. But overall, you know, most people expect that the unemployment claims will go down as, you know, as vaccination rates steadily increase.
Yeah. So maybe this is a one-off. Boy, that'll make next week's jobs report interesting to see, right?
Correct. Yeah. So, you know, like... one thing to keep in mind, though, is the continuing claims, you know, which is actually the metric that actually measures how many people are actually receiving unemployment benefits. That's kind of flatlined, and we're at 14.8 million people who are receiving UI benefits. So that's another metric to keep an eye out for to, you know, gauge the long-term health of the economy.
Is this cutting along political lines at all? Or do the Republicans have a different view of this than Democrats, and are they at odds with what to do about this?
Yeah, so, you know, about last month, we saw a pretty bad jobs report that, you know, many forecasters had, you know, over a million. We got like a paltry amount. So Republicans seized on the opportunity to, you know, make the case against the federal unemployment insurance, which is, you know, adds $300 a week to state unemployment checks. And, you know, since then, we've seen GOP-led states, around 25 so far, you know, announced they'll be cutting those federal unemployment programs like over the next few months. So, you know, the administration hasn't really indicated it's going to step in. So, you know, we're going to see these cuts, and, you know, experts that I've talked to projected that, you know, 4 million people are at risk of losing that aid in the coming weeks and months.
Plenty of states are not including the unemployment supplement either. They just don't want to discourage people from going back and getting jobs, the idea being that there's plenty of work out there. People just aren't taking it, right?
Right, yeah. So, I mean, depending on how you view it, because, you know, this is like, you know, this can be a very political argument. You know, Republicans do view, you know, unemployment, the federal unemployment insurance to be a key factor of discouraging people from work. But the economists that I talk to have like a more mixed view. You know, they will agree that, you know, it's probably, you know, like a factor, but it's not the main one, because you know, there's also, you know, the lack of schools that are open, and then also you know, just the amount of jobs that are actually open are kind of like, you know, low paying crummy jobs in the service sector. So, you know, people are probably going to be, you know, relying on the UI to maybe hold out for a better job until for a little while longer. So it really does, you know, this does cut across political lines, as you say.
I would like to see a breakdown of the kinds of jobs people aren't taking. That is, if it's standing on your feet all day washing dishes or serving food, maybe you aren't real anxious to go back. If it's something that is more a career track or an office job, something more comfortable, maybe those people are more inclined to go back, even if staying home would be the same amount of money. Just real quick then, the Dow fell for the second day. It lost 350 points. I'm not sure how we're going to finish today. We're up a little bit. Much to read into that from your perspective?
I mean, the stocks will go up and down, you know, as the economy recovers. But yeah, I mean, it did take a hit yesterday and probably today as well after the Fed forecasted, you know, higher inflation for the year, and then also moved up its timeline for interest rate hikes. You know, now it's forecasting two increases in 2023. You know, it's in, you know, earlier this year it's been projected to hold near zero until 2024. But, you know, another thing to keep in mind is that Powell has forecasted, you know, he's kind of upbeat on the strength of the labor market. The unemployment rate right now is at 5.8%. He expects it to slide to 4.5% by the end of 2021. And then, we'll be able to return, at least according to the Fed, to pre-pandemic unemployment levels by the end of 2023.
Joseph Zeboyos-Roig, economic policy reporter, insider.com. Okay, Joseph, thanks for your time this afternoon.
Appreciate having me on. Thank you.
Amazon's bringing its cashierless checkout tech to the full-size grocery stores. Ian Schur starts there. He's the editor at CNET. Visit CNET.com, an editor at large. Hey, Ian, welcome back to the show.
How are you doing?
Good. Let's talk about Amazon. What are they doing?
Yeah, they are taking this technology that's really fascinating. It's essentially a just walk out is what they call it. And what happens is you use an app that's on your phone that, of course, is connected to your Amazon account. And what you do is you scan it as you're walking through these kind of turn stanchions, like you're going to Disneyland. And what happens is there's a bunch of cameras all over the store and sensors on the shelves that identify when you take something off the shelf or not. And what happens is that it actually memorizes what you've taken and puts it on kind of a digital receipt. And all you have to do is walk out, and it automatically charges you. There's no lines. There's no putting stuff in bags. You just go. And I've actually tested it myself. I've used it at an Amazon Go store in San Francisco, and I have tried to confuse it, trying to kind of take stuff off, put it back, take it off, put it back, think about it, put it back again. And I even walked out with a cookie, and they charged me all $1.50 for it. So it definitely works, and it was a pretty good cookie, too.
I have tried it, too. There's one two buildings over from us. It's one of the first stores in the country here in Chicago. So a bunch of us went over there. My producer, Elif, and I did. Violetta, who used to work here, we all went over and shopped. And we did the same sort of things, not because we were testing the system, but because that's how people shop. You pick it up, you put it back. Elif said, I'd like that item. I put it in her basket. But wait, I picked it up. So am I buying it or is she buying it? It was, if the computers have it figured out, that's great. I was thoroughly confused. I'm serious. I don't know that I had a lot of confidence that it knew what the right bill was.
Well, I think a lot of times the question is whether or not, I remember whenever a new technology comes along, and my favorite example is the elevator, is that people constantly are afraid of new technology, and they're like, I don't know if I can trust this. And so part of the reason we had people in elevators for so long manning the elevators was to make everyone feel comfortable, right?
Wow.
Other reasons, too. But that was one of the things. And I think what's going to be interesting is that as Amazon is expanding this technology, right, and making it available in their what are called fresh stores, which are different from Whole Foods, even though they own Whole Foods, they're going to start testing to see whether or not they can do this at a larger scale, right? Does it work in a small store? Sure, because you have like 10 people max in it.
Yeah.
But when you get to a grocery store and you've got like dozens of people, I'm sure it works, but getting people comfortable with the idea is going to be very different.
Another example might be gas stations. We used to have a guy come out and pump your gas, and then you give
exactly.
him the money. Imagine
yep.
how weird that would seem now. I can pump the gas. You don't need to pump the gas.
Oh, all you have to do is get in New Jersey, and it'll feel weird. They insist on pumping for you.
Oh, really? Is that one of the states that says
that is one of the last states doing it, yep.
Give me some Father's Day gift ideas, Ian.
Well, there are a bunch, of course, of ideas that we've got on CNET. And, you still got your two-day shipping if you play it well in the next day or so.
Yeah.
And so we have a lot of different stuff. A lot of people joke around fathers are some of the hardest people to shop for. And that's partially true for me. But one of the things we recommend is that, there's a lot of technology that goes on sale these days during Mother's and Father's Day because the retailers have realized, this is a great way to pull people in, right? It used to be like cheap DVDs. Now it's technology. So we've got everything on there from like a recommendation for a not too expensive TV, but that one that we all at CNET love. It's made by a company called TCL. They're Chinese, but oh my God, a good television. And our reviewer, David Katzmeier, who's both loved and hated in the industry because he's so good at what he does, he recommends it as the best value of a TV you can buy right now. It's about $800 to $1,000, depending on where you look for it. There are also streaming sticks out there, right, to help you be able to get on streaming services like Disney Plus or Apple even. A lot of them now support. And by the way, if you're looking for a last minute thing, you don't have time to ship something, a streaming service is a great idea, right? $5 and they get to try out, watch the next Marvel movie or be able to watch an HBO movie or whatever else. And other subscriptions out there, if you haven't thought about them, there's coffee subscriptions. There's one called Atlas Coffee Club. We're pretty big fans of it at CNET. You can learn how to play an instrument through Musician. It's spelled just how it sounds. And then, of course, there's like Masterclass. Groupon, it still exists. They're in Chicago, and people use them all the time. In fact, I use it whenever I go to a new city to take a ghost tour because they're always like half off, and ghost tours are so fun.
I have completely forgot about Groupon. That was all the rage for a while.
Yeah, and they still, and the thing is that they haven't, you know, they're not what they were, of course, but what they have realized is that there's a really great way for small businesses to be able to market experiences, right? Jet ski or whatever else. And so it's actually become a really one of my go-tos when I'm going traveling because it just gives me ideas, right? A lot of times I can't even, you know, I'm going to Virginia in a couple of weeks and I'm like, what am I going to do there? And Groupon always has something, right? Either it's a going to a wine bar or whatever else, and it's a good place to get some ideas around.
Speaking of shopping for Father's Day, Amazon Prime Days, there's two of them, right? It's like a 48-hour Prime Day
is
around the corner. Any suggestions or tips for us there, Ian?
Yeah, so one of the other things, you know, there's this whole cottage industry of figuring out what is worth a deal these days. And, of course, we had seen that do it for technology and some other stuff as well. And one of the things that we did is we actually share how we do it. So if you go to CNET, you can learn how to figure out, well, was this a good deal or not? And, yeah, we've got, like, crazy spreadsheets of thousands of lines and stuff. You don't have to do that. We do that for you. But there are a bunch of different technologies out there to help you. For example, my favorite website to try is called Camel, Camel, Camel. It's the word camel three times. I don't know why they call it it. Just that's what it is. And what you do is you take the Amazon link, you put it into Camel, 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 and it'll tell you the entire price history of that item. So you can figure out, oh, is it on quote-unquote sale, or is it actually on sale?
Drop it into a website called CamelCamelCamel.com.
CamelCamelCamel.com.
It's nice to talk to you again, Ian. Thanks for the tip. I think a lot of us are going to try that. That's news to me. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Absolutely.
Ian Schur is an editor-at-large, CNET.com. Greg McBride joins us, Senior Vice President and Chief Analyst at Bankrate.com. Greg, welcome back to WGN.
Good afternoon, John. Thanks for having me.
We've been talking a lot about the jobs report and those numbers and, of course, the Fed and what the Fed is saying and doing. Start with the Fed, if you don't mind, for just a minute. You know, it's funny to me that they said that interest rates might go up in a couple of years and there was a reaction. I don't know where I'm going to be in a couple of years. How was that something that moved the markets? 2023, for crying out loud.
You're right. You know, investors and traders love low interest rates. And so even a whisper of, hey, we're going to take the punch bowl away, it makes investors and traders nervous.
Uh-huh.
As part of that, though, it wasn't just the fact that, you know, the 2023 timeframe started to come into view for when they'd start raising short-term rates. But the prelude to that, which is going to come much sooner, is them starting to dial back their purchases of long-term bonds. And so you saw a reaction yesterday on long-term interest rates that jumped after the meeting in response to that. The interesting thing is, you know, now that everybody's had a night to sleep on it, we've actually reversed much of that move today. So, you know, I think it kind of maybe back to maybe the overall point you were making of, hey, if this is a couple of years away and there's still a lot of unknowns with regard to the economy, why get all worked up about this now?
Well, that was my thought. In fact, I thought I'll give them a pass if circumstances change. You're not married to that opinion in June of 2021. If items are different on the agenda, then I presume their policy will be different, right?
Absolutely. You know, I heard a good analogy for it the other day. The CEO of Bank of America actually had said that, you know, everybody kind of thinks of the Fed as like, you know, these great soothsayers that are looking well down the road and predicting things far in the future, when in reality, they're like mountain climbers. They're just going from, you know, that one peg to the next, one meeting to the next, right? They're based on what's in front of them. And there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, you know, we've seen the economic sentiments, you know, swing back and forth. I mean, pretty significant changes in how they view the economy today versus how they viewed it in March. And that being said, you know, there have been some maybe less than expected improvement on the job front. And I think that, you know, that sort of argues for, hey, wait a minute, don't get all worked up about the Fed raising rates in a couple of years. You know, there's everything's written in pencil at this point.
March to June, their opinion of the economy changed how?
Well, they really upgraded economic growth, their outlook for economic growth, and this year for inflation. You know, of course, the economy's doing much, much better now than it was back in March. We've really seen it snap back very quickly and rev into a higher gear. And so the expectation for economic growth this year was revised up from 6.5% to 7%. Inflation back in March, they said this year it would be about 2.4%. Now they say it'll be 3.4% this year. The Fed viewing the economy as kind of maybe a little bit further down the pathway towards recovery than was the case just a few months ago.
Well, 7% is better than 6.5, but 6.5 is pretty good. And they were optimistic at the beginning of the year, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the revisions, each time they put out new projections,
yeah,
the revisions keep going up, and that's a good thing. If that means higher interest rates down the road, I think we'll take it, right? I mean, an economy that's growing at a fast pace, creating jobs, where incomes are going up, that's all the stuff we want.
Well, on the other side of that ledger, is there a scenario where I'm going to start to get a better return on money that I'm putting in a bank account or in a CD?
Yeah, the outlook for that one's not great in the near term because it's very dependent upon primarily when the Fed starts to raise short-term interest rates, which, like we've said, at this point looks to be 2023. The other wild card there is if loan demand were to really pick up and banks needed to bring in deposits. In the past, we've seen that drive deposit yields higher. But the problem now is banks have the opposite situation. They're sitting on a pile of deposits, and the loan demand has been pretty underwhelming. So I think we're a long way off from that scenario unfolding either.
Really? People aren't borrowing a lot of money to buy houses?
The housing market's been good, but there's such a limited inventory of homes available for sale. Existing home sales have actually been down 3 months in a row. So the prices may be going up, but the number of properties that are changing hands has decreased each of the past 3 months. You saw something similar with new home sales, and even home builder sentiment took a step back this month as well. So you're seeing that lack of supply and the various supply chain constraints starting to show up in what had been a white hot housing market.
This is such an un-American sentiment. We love to spend money. We don't save money. We are always happy to throw money at homes and cars and shoes and clothes and everything.
Oh, and we're getting back to that, John. Don't you worry. those savings habits that we saw over the course of really since pre-pandemic over the last 15 months or so. I think to some extent you will see more of a focus on having that safety net, that emergency savings, that rainy day fund. But there's a lot of what they call revenge spending that I think is, taking place now, and we're going to see it certainly through the balance of this year. People want to go to the Cubs games that they weren't able to go to, last year. They want to take that vacation. They want to, go shopping and dining out, those kind of things. And so there's, a lot of pent-up demand for, those type of things. Are, it's going to drive economic activity. That's why we're talking about 7% growth this year. I think it'll, in some ways, I think it'll bring us back to the old favorite American tradition of spending.
One last thing. What wisdom do you have about the inability of businesses to attract employees? It's this conundrum, isn't it? We've got all of these unemployed people, and we have all of these unfilled jobs.
Yeah, you're right. And it's at the point now where, that's becoming a headwind to economic growth. I mean, if we're going to hit that 7%, I mean, with, the 9.3 million unfilled jobs right now, you wonder, gee, if we were able to fill a good chunk of those, what would economic growth be? Could it be 7.5 or 8 or 8.5%? The Fed yesterday talked a little bit about that. And they're part of that is they're feeling that as the virus recedes, people will go back to work. As schools reopen in the fall, more people will come back to work. And as, you know, various unemployment benefits sunset,
yeah,
more people will come back to work. So they see the labor force growing in the months ahead and maybe, you know, alleviating some of that labor shortage.
Particularly since some of those unemployment benefits aren't sunsetting, they're getting the plug pulled on them. Some of the states just aren't going to continue to give it. Greg McBride is a senior vice president and chief analyst at Bankrate.com. Okay, Greg, always a pleasure. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much, John.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and we've got more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The Justice Department has filed an antitrust lawsuit to stop Aon's $30 billion acquisition of Willis Towers Watson. The Chicago deal would combine two of the biggest insurance brokers in the world. The feds say the union would reduce competition and could lead to higher prices. The companies have issued a joint statement saying they disagree with the lawsuit. Aon and Willis have already agreed to sell a portfolio of assets to resolve antitrust concerns in the European Union. J.P. Morgan Chase says it will invest $150 million in grants and low-cost loans on Chicago's south and west sides. The announcement builds on a $50 million investment already announced back in 2017. Two-thirds of the $150 million will be distributed as grants and the remaining third in low-cost loans. The money will fund south and west side programs that connect people with careers in growing fields, preserve or create low-income housing, provide services for small business owners, and help people access financial services. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
The business of food continues. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yes, sir. How great it was to hear Max Armstrong on with you about an hour ago. Max and Orion set the standard for ag broadcasters worldwide. Let's begin by checking our Farm to Your Belly calendar for today. This is a big one. Not only is it National Eat Your Vegetables Day, it is National Apple Strudel Day and National Cherry Tart Day. Enjoy all three. Let's talk about exports. The numbers are in for the first 7 months of the fiscal year for ag exports, October through April, and during that time,
agricultural exports were $107 billion compared to $84.7 billion the same time last year.
That is USDA economist Bart Kenner. And since we always seem to be focused on China and how much it is buying, how much of that $107 billion was Chinese money?
$24.3 billion, 23% of total agricultural exports.
And of that, most of it is something we raise a lot of here in the Midwest.
Soybeans.
Yes, sir. And China's soybean purchases are up 215% from a year ago, $13.5 billion worth.
So more than half of the exports to China are in soybeans.
Coming in a distant second for export sales to China is corn at $2.5 billion. But compared to the same period in 2020, a huge increase.
110,000%.
China has a lot of mouths to feed, both human and animal, and it's buying up a lot of other U.S. farm products.
Wheat products, more than 1,000% increase over this time last year. Beef and veal, up 840% over this time last year. Poultry products are up over 200%. Pork is down 30% as they recover from African swine fever.
All of that money China is spending is nice, but there's an old farm saying warning about putting your eggs in one basket, and Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack is wary of how much of our exports are going to China.
Because of the complex nature of the Chinese-U.S. relationship, things can happen that might affect those purchases.
And underlining what he just said, sales to China have stalled over the last 2 months because of a stronger dollar after the Fed meeting yesterday, making exports more expensive, and also beneficial rain. Both of those factors are causing the crop futures at the Chicago Board of Trade to be down today in big numbers. Soybeans are down 85 cents, corn is down 39 cents, and wheat is down 19 cents. And that's your money and business of food on 720 WGN.
Wintrust Business Lunch. Amy Guth, let's get started talking about airlines and tickets. What are you seeing?
Yeah, so earlier today, there was another internet outage that did impact Southwest Airlines. It impacted the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, United Airlines, Commonwealth Bank of Australia. To me, this really speaks to just how dependent we are on our connectivity. So we saw this just not many days ago from Fastly. That was a company. They are also a content delivery network. This one, all these different companies used a company called Akamai, but in a very similar way to Fastly. That's all back up and running now. LAX said that they experienced some issues, but they didn't see any significant delays. United said they were, you know, working through some technical issues, but they were hoping to get it resolved quickly, and then they did. So we didn't see, you know, major delays like we did with that previous outage from Fastly. But again, this is, it's so interesting just to kind of see how any kind of software bug, any kind of minor issue can have such a major impact for companies around the world.
This is an industry that just doesn't need any more pressure right now, for crying out loud.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, if we're talking about banks and airlines, like we could, I think those groups right there kind of need a minute, and it was not helpful. But it looks like they got through it okay. United Airlines was out on Twitter talking with a lot of customers who were expressing frustration. It seemed a lot more, a little more low key than the outage a few days ago when there was a lot of Southwest customers complaining a lot on social media. Seems a little low key, and it was resolved a little bit faster too.
This isn't exactly related to that, but it does make me think of when you talk about connectivity, the talks between Biden and Putin the other day, and the president of the United States telling the president of Russia, look, here are 16 target areas. We will not tolerate any interference. And if you do, we will hit you back in spades. And so that's, I think, just a reminder of how vulnerable and connected everybody is these days.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And how seriously we have to take cybersecurity. You know, there was some reporting in Cranes earlier this week about how cybersecurity is now such an increasingly bigger line item in budgets for companies, including for insurance against it. That's something a lot of companies hadn't taken out insurance policies for. And now increasingly companies are saying, hey, this is a big deal. Our business would be completely stopped if we weren't able to connect with all of our systems. We need to be insured against that, whether it's, you know, for criminal intent or just kind of an outage that's, you know, a software bug.
I didn't know you could take out insurance for that. I guess you can. I did see that it was as a line item, generally insufficiently budgeted by companies. I hope this one and all of them are taking that more seriously, because that's, well, it's clear now how vulnerable things are. Let's put it that way.
Exactly.
Speaking of chicken sandwiches, so are we going to have another summer rage of sandwich wars here or battles?
Well, if McDonald's, KFC, and Burger King have anything to say about it, yes, they have all launched fried chicken sandwiches in a bid to match that 2019 viral success of Popeyes that I'm sure we all remember. But it's coming at an interesting time where we have chicken shortages. We have right now processed poultry, jumped to an all-time high in May. That was a 2.1% eighth straight monthly increase. So that's according to some government data. So we've been seeing chicken prices rising for about, you know, eight, almost 9 months now. Enter these fast food companies making these sandwiches. At the same time, U.S. restaurants are reporting that more people are ordering chicken than beef and pork. So we have all these things kind of converging on top of our supply chain issues, where we saw shortages in plants and processing plants during the pandemic, because employees were not able to work as closely together. And it's an interesting moment because we have a supply shortage, we have chicken prices going way, way up, and these restaurants kind of going in trying to get a lot of people to buy chicken sandwiches. So I to answer your original question, yes, possibly we will have a very chicken focused summer, but I could see there being some shortages as people are looking to try those new sandwiches.
Yeah, it makes me want to line all five of them up and
right. Do
a little taste test. The problem, we tried that last year, was you couldn't get your hand 2 years ago on a Popeye's chicken sandwich. That was the thing.
Right.
All right. Let's visit again. Thanks, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.